Happy Monday night. Today is March 27th, 2023. This is Across the Pitch. If you've never watched us before, welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Mike Barrera. As always, well, not as always. As of recently, it hasn't been as always. But tonight, we have the gang back together again. We have our brother from England, Dave Miller. And we have our Pennsylvania friend and what I guess also international man himself, Jose Nunez. How are you guys doing tonight, Jose?
Doing all right, man. Ready to be frustrated when I bang my head against the wall like we were last week, but just really excited to have Davo back. We missed you, pal.
Yeah, Dave, how you doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I was drafted into work last week, but back here tonight, ready for to talk, unfortunately, all things Union at the bank. I mean, it's not been the most ideal start to the season.
No, it has been. Yeah, so, I mean, I was talking to Jose last week, Dave. You know, it's we haven't been together in almost a month, the three of us, because of obligations, sicknesses, everything else in between. I'm looking at the schedule right now, guys, by the way. Next Monday, I believe, is a national championship game for the for NCAA, so I might not be here next Monday. So we'll figure that out later on this week. But as we've titled this episode, there's a bit of a concern in Chester regarding our beloved Philadelphia Union. If you guys missed the match on Saturday, they fell for the first time at home since September of 2021 to Orlando, 2-1. But the real story from that game was within the first 10 minutes. So, Jose, you were at the stadium, right, Jose?
Yeah, I was at the stadium, 140, loud and proud with the rest of those guys. What a frustrating 10 minutes and really 97, I guess, or probably more than that with the added time and the referee adding more and more to it. Coldish evening-ish. That rain held out. I think I actually thought the stadium was going to be way more empty than it actually was, considering, you know, the rain being called for up until maybe 3 hours, 4 hours before match, and then suddenly no rain until the last 10 minutes, which was wonderful. But man, what a frustrated evening. I'd be interested to hear from you, Dave, what you thought watching it from the other side of the pond.
I mean, again, when you can see twice in the first 8 minutes of a game, it's never, it's never ideal. I think the most striking thing was the man of the two goals. I think, again, look at the man of the game and you can see two great goals. And you think, okay, fair enough, you can hold your hands up. But just the manner of both goals was just so poor. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion online about the first goal. Just think it's just a calamity from everyone really involved in it, from the defenders and Leon. People have to take accountability for their man. So, again, obviously, it was smart play from I'm not too sure who won the initial header, but obviously, he started deep when the ball was played forward and then dropped in. So, again, like,
Pereira.
Someone has to communicate now. If it's a centre back, one of the centre backs has to let Leon Flack know that the guy's coming. Has obviously pulled up, or you have to go out with him. Leon could have gone for the header, unless someone else has made a call for it. Who knows? But it was an ideal goal. And the second goal for me was just as bad, if not worse, to lose possession as cheaply as it was on the halfway line. And then you get bodies back, and then Jack Elliott's obviously pushed out to the ball to try and press it. And Jochen Torres has obviously had to drop in. Watched his man run across him into the penalty area, marked. And Joe Bendit, crikey, just literally left the entire far corner open. He literally just stood there and was saying to the forward, literally just passed the ball to the bottom corner and I let it in because it was just the positioning was terrible. It wasn't a good, it was a disastrous first eight or nine minutes. I think my friend who was watching the game messaged me going, he turned it off after the third minute. So like the first couple of games. And then obviously, I think after the second goal, I think he definitely tuned out. But I think it was just a bad afternoon for a team who clearly hasn't sorted out its depth. And in obviously, the MLS sort of transfer market hasn't addressed the depth concerns. Perhaps we were confident at the start of the season, but clearly looking at it, we're not as perhaps as solid as we thought we were.
Yeah, it's been just doing some backtracking here, right? So as we just talked about before we entered, we've played five MLS matches so far. If you look at the two CCL matches, the first game was on a pitch that really nobody can thrive on. So I kind of throw that out the window. The second CCL match was obviously very much early decided with the red card being awarded to us. So you look at these five games, as best you can. First game we win, didn't look great to start the first half, you know, right? Of course, getting that rust off from the offseason. Like you said, Dave, those two golazos in Miami really beat us, and you can't do anything besides tip your hat. But then that's when things started becoming actually worrisome for us. We hosted Chicago, looked kind of poor. We went to Montreal and, you know, didn't really have the best performance. And now this match, yes, international duty affected both sides, right? Both teams are playing, we're missing players. But our lineup should have been good enough to win, if not draw at home. And it wasn't. I know, as Dave, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of talks about the first goal with Leon Flock. Maybe this shows you how important Martinez really is in that sixth spot. Because, you know, kind of, I guess, piggyback off what Dave was saying, Leon was kind of stuck in no man's land. I think he should have been more aggressive with it. I think Jose would have probably been more aggressive in getting that header from Pereira. I know, as any unit, all three of us have talked about since the game, and I know Danny Higginbottom mentioned it on that evening, Flock was basically just trailing Pereira, and there was just a lot of miscommunication in that space in between him and the center backs. But the problem is, Dave, is miscommunication shouldn't be happening with this group. It's not like Jacob and Jack and Leon haven't played together before in that spot, nor is, I mean, Leon starts every game, so the communication should be better. But Jose, I mean, what's more worrisome for you, the communication side of things, or maybe the depth issue that we are starting to kind of see on the, in the lineup?
I'm convinced that it has to do with the communication, right? I think, yes, we should be frantically looking for a striker. I think, Dave, you were loud and clear about that in the group chat of, you know, if you're Tanner, or if you're someone judging Tanner for his work this offseason, sure, we brought in some great pieces, but where's that striker piece, right? Is it really Carranza, Uwa, and then you go to Quinn, and then Donovan, maybe, right? Is that really the answer? I don't know. But communication-wise, I think, yes, that was some of it. But you also, you know, having played that left side myself, personally, I don't think Leon's used to having that much space around him, right? Where he usually sits, he either has a very small amount of space, and then it's the chalk. I call it the chalk, the line, right? He has the line up to his back, and he does not have to worry about anybody roaming behind him. He doesn't have to worry about anybody running past him on that side. And if they do, he can certainly take a look at it and follow. But man, it reminded me of the very first time you throw somebody into a different position in any type of game. May it be adult amateur soccer, high school soccer, collegiate soccer, and it's a position they're not used to. And I think it was just so apparent with Leon that that was, and all due respect to Orlando, they are a good team. They took Tigres to the 12th hour to, you know, challenge them in the CCL. That's not disrespect them for what they are too. But Leon was just, I think he just had a hard time. You know? Well,
then Jose, I'm going to stop you then real quick. Then yeah. If I agree with you 100%. Why not Bueno there then?
I don't know. I thought about that after the fact. I was a frustrated getting into the stadium because there was an accident. So I got there maybe with like 10 minutes to go before the game started. So I rushed, finished a beer that I started in the car as a passenger.
Sure.
And strolled into the game and I thought, oh my God, really? This is the lineup. This is something. Bueno is a far slicker, better passing, more offensive, but I think slicker in that he can actually move, not Leon, who I think is just a synonym for Bedoya and how stiff he is in his movement, if that makes any sense. I think Leon and Bedoya are just such very stiff players where their hips are always, they're having a hard time moving and shifting their body around and their speed, where you have someone like our Pereira and our Gazdag, who are just slick, shifty, right? So faster for sure. So I don't know. The Bueno decision was just, again, head scratching, where the man just deserves an opportunity. And if not this Saturday, I don't know what. I really don't know what it's going to be. You'd think an international break would do it.
Well, Dave, I like your point about the strikers. I do think that Quinn should be the number three striker. But the problem is that I was looking for, I mean, I know right now the lineups are kind of been a little bit awkward because of the constant traveling and games. But I mean, wasn't Torres supposed to be almost like a backup striker as well? Or maybe even play as a second 10 and change the formation up? I mean, do you think Torres is the person you're looking for or no?
I mean, clearly not. Because, I mean, apart from that first game when the Union already won that 3-1, he hasn't actually. And obviously, again, you can obviously say the goal that he did score at Chicago, but again, it was a lucky goal. In. He struggled to really be involved in games. I can't remember him doing much in the game on Saturday. He didn't really influence the Miami game when he came on. But again, the potential's there. It's just a matter. For me, I think the biggest issue about this team is, perhaps Jim as well, is they fail to adapt to situations, because the amount of times in that first half, there was so much open space and the Union were constantly outnumbered defensively. It was just shocking. Like, a fullback was pulled out of position. I mean, the amount of times, especially at left-hand side, where Orlando would break forward and there was just so much space down the left and it pulls people out of position. And again, I think the biggest question of the season, again, we can talk about depth, is how bad have the Union looked defensively the last few weeks? Like,
yeah,
they've looked shocking in the last three games, especially, okay, like, they got away with it against Chicago. But again, if they play a team like Montreal, and you have got that proven finisher like Kyoto, or even this week with these sort of very good attacking players that Orlando got, Union, again, are probably 2 or 3 nil down in the first 15, 20 minutes. And they can't keep getting away with it. And I know we sit here and Jacob Glasner is defender of the year, Jack Elliott, they formed a great partnership. But again, this team needs to adapt to the situations. And if you're seeing your midfield get overrun, there's gaps in your defence, and surely you have to try and adjust and match up instead of playing such a narrow formation where against a team that has essentially four attackers, and you've got Leon Flack isolated on the zone, you've got your left-back bombing up forward, Pereira, who's not used to doing that job, is sitting in, also going forward. You've got Olivier going forward. You're just going to be constantly outnumbered. Right. And again, you have to adapt. And that's perhaps one knock of Jim's game, is he fails to adapt. He fails to perhaps change his lineup and change the team to the players that are actually available to him. So
that was one of the points I made online. Because somebody said Tanner didn't do enough to make this team better. I think that's bullshit. I think the three additions he's made have all made more contributions in this short amount of span or time than Paxton Aaronson ever did. So if you just look, even Stuart Finley, I mean, I'd say Damian Lowe has already outperformed Stuart from a game perspective. I mean, maybe not all the way, but pretty damn close.
Don't forget the COVID game. That was a great game for Stu.
Well, that was, yes. But the point being is on paper, they're better. The three players they've acquired have all made contributions. If anything, the three players they've acquired are arguably the most important players right now of the season, because they've all made impacts in various games that we've won or drawn in. So my point online was, it's not the roster that's the issue. It's the way the roster is being used is the issue. Because it seems like every single time we're on camera talking, we're in the chat talking, it's, well, why wasn't this player being used? Why wasn't this person being used? I mean, so let's say, for example, Perea. He should be starting. I mean, I don't know what he has to do more. To your point, Jose, right? Knocking on Jim's door saying, what do I have to do to earn a start? He gets a start, and he does obviously great. He should be on the left-hand side over Leon Flock. Because at this point, you can't just keep doing the same thing. It's something's obviously not working. There's some sort of issue with chemistry. And even if you look at the goal, the second goal, so Elliott wins back the ball. He passes it to Torres. Leon Flock is wide open to his right. And sometimes I notice that these players have Leon open and they just don't pass it to him. And I wonder if they hesitate sometimes giving him the ball, knowing his creativity is limited. I just don't see that being a problem with Perea. I see Perea being that same exact position and Torres giving him a quick one-time touch to move the ball forward up the pitch. So I would like to see Andres be more of the starting role on the left-hand side. I would like Torres obviously continue to be a bench player, Jack McGlynn to be the bench player, maybe coming in for him in the 60th minute for Andres. And I want Leon to be more of a Warren Cravall style player, Jose. Is that kind of where he's? No, because like, when is Leon really going to benefit us late in games if we're winning? Right, we want to have.
Yeah, just clogging up the middle, just dirty tackles, take a yellow.
Exactly. So if it's not working in the midfield right now, and you know Gazdag's not coming out, you know Brujo is not coming out, and you know Bedoya is not coming out, then at least try to change it with Leon. even just for a handful of games, and make him just not be present and see what happens. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Jose, go ahead.
No, what is it? 38 games for the season, right? Total?
Yeah.
Okay, MLS season. We're not counting, you know, US Open and everything in between.
Right.
We're only 13% into the season. Let's just be very clear about that. But 13% into a season that last year was razor thin in the amount of mistakes and the amount of points that could be dropped. So it's really interesting to think about that first and foremost. But I think the exercise to really think about too is, was it the right call to keep all 92% of the minutes from last year when other teams went ahead and shifted players around, right? And I might be backtracking on what I said at one point, that, you know, sometimes in this league, especially with good players jumping abroad, good players sometimes not often jumping around within the league, but is it questionable at this point to think that, man, was it the right call to keep all 92% of those minutes from last year? I don't know. It's intriguing to me, but I think you're also right in that of Perea. You know, he has to start at Kansas, against Kansas at home.
Agreed.
I wonder if this is, I know, Dave, you and I have gone mad over this, but at what point do we just give Bedoya a night off, even if it's at home, right?
Yeah.
Is that where he can slot in and just play and make do despite, you know, being left? I can't even remember what Perea is. I think he's right footed. I think he favors his right. you know, let him take that sideline, which actually would probably benefit him rather than cutting in every single time over Flock's side. I don't know. It's intriguing, but I continue to ask the question, how do we move on from Bedoya? Right?
Well, okay, so then here's my lineup, Jose. In a perfect world, okay? It's going to be the four in the back, right? The usual group. It'd be Brujo, Andres, Gazdag, McGlynn. And then Torres would be on the bench. And then you would have Uwa and Carranza. Because, like, yes, I know the Union are very much, this is a defensive team first, defensive-minded team first. But the problem is they're not playing well enough on defense, and they're giving up goals early, and they're not talented enough on the field to then catch up and score. At the very least, if you have the offensive talent to begin with, sometimes the best defense is offense, and you pressure them, and can score early. And then if you want to shut down the match after that, then so be it. I mean, Dave, if you could do anything you want, how would you change this lineup? Because I feel like what I just did is put together a much better lineup with both Ali and Leon out.
Well, I think the weird thing is, just think about it, this is such a mirror of our 2021 season.
I know.
Again, that 2021 season, the Union struggled in terms of going forward. They conceded a lot of early goals, but in terms of the lineup, no offense to Jim, you've got 2 weeks to prepare for this Orlando game. You know your players are going to international duty. Okay, you lose Julian, so you have a week to prepare for it. Why have you not just adapted to the players that you've got on the field as opposed to putting in players that work for the system? Because a 4-2-3-1 could have easily worked on Saturday evening, and it's crazy.
Well, who would have been your 4-2-3-1? Go ahead.
Why don't you start Olivier Mbiza as a right winger? Because I personally thought that was his best game going forward this weekend. He got a lot of good crosses into the box. He got forward a lot. He got a lot of joy. I'd have, honestly, if this is obviously a 4-2-3-1, I'd have started, obviously, Bendick and goal, Harriel, Elliot, Glasnez, Wagner, and then you'd have had, Bedoya and Flack is like the 6/8, and Baiza on the right, Torres on the left, and then Pereira in the middle, Uwa up front. And then you have managed to get your best players that you've actually got available to you in your starting squad, as opposed to chucking in Chris Donovan, who hasn't scored. I don't think he scored an MLS goal, hasn't been hit that much. And you're forcing in, again, you don't have to force in these players just to fit the system. And I guess if the rumors are true, obviously, that we're playing the system consistently because it's the way that Ernest Tanner wants to play. And then if it gets to a point that, again, teams are going to find you out if you play the exact same system for 3-4 years in a row. Like, look at Man City, for example, Jose. Like, Pep changes it up so consistently, not just his lineup, but he changes up the formations, the patterns of play. The Union team, you know exactly how they're going to line up every single week, and it makes things so easy and predictable. And you know, they're going to try and sit back, they're going to try and catch you on the counter-attack, they're going to use their pace of the strikers. Teams can easily catch on, and obviously, are we ever going to see five at the back or whatever? I mean, who knows? But I think it gets to a point where perhaps you do need to perhaps change things up just to catch out your opponent a bit and try and catch them off guard. You know, they look at your lineup and the way you line up with a 4-2-3-1, and they think, oh, bloody hell, like, we didn't prepare for this. We sort of made sure we packed the middle so they can, then you've got the width and play wide. But yeah, I think it's just, at the moment, it's just, again, it feels so much like the 2021 season where it's going to be such a frustrating ride until perhaps we get knocked out of the CCL, which somehow alleviate the pressure and the stress. Obviously, with the Atlas game coming up, it'd be interesting to see how Jim does pick the team, because again, no disrespect to Alianza, but Atlas from a different stratosphere. And
yeah.
So, I mean, a very, very strong side. So again, how are you going to approach this? Are we going to end up seeing Chris Donovan again? And, you know, again, this weekend, obviously, I presume that Hooding will be back in the starting lineup. I mean, will Bakenu play more than 90 minutes? More than 70 minutes, sorry. I mean, again, there's just so many questions going into this game with this team where you don't know the answer to, and it's concerning that you don't know the answer to it.
I think we know the answer to it. I think we just know it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Can this team adjust?
I think we've all laid out options of what could be done. I think, Dave, I think your lineup with a 4-2-3-1 is great. Because who would have been your subs? Donovan would have been your sub.
Yeah, that's my other problem. I'm not being funny. But if you're losing 2-1 in a game, why the hell are you bringing on a left back and for your striker? I mean, okay, you've got Raffinella on the bench. I know he don't think he's playing the MLS, but chuck the attacker on and give them an opportunity to impact the game. I don't care if he's never played before. It's better than sticking a left back on. What is Matt Rael going to offer you when losing 2-1 in a game?
Was the tactic then to just push up Elliott to be a you know, just like a Corey Burke and just flick the ball off? Because
I think they did that.
I was going to say, I think that's what happened, right? Because once Real came in, every single ball was an air ball, whether coming for a Glasnes or from Real himself, aiming at Elliott's big old head that's, you know, a foot ahead of everybody else. Did I see that right?
I was going to say, I think he sort of pushed more further on, like the last 5-10 minutes.
He did.
Because obviously, and the thing, again, the three subs, okay, I mean, if Uwan's struggling, fair enough, but I'm not being funny, like, the Union, I can't remember Orlando actually getting in the Union's half that second half up to the point of the three changes. And then as soon as the three changes happened, the momentum was killed. Like, in terms of, okay, the Union still great chances, but the game opened up so much more. Orlando got more joy going forward. They got more possession of the ball. And the Union just looked a bit more stretched, as opposed in the first 25 minutes of the second half. They were camped inside the Orlando half. Orlando couldn't get out. The Union had them camped in, and they were constantly on the attack. And they made the three changes, and they completely killed that. The game got, as I said, like, Orlando probably had 2 or 3 massive chances after the three changes were made. And I think it did upset the balance. I think I don't know why he took Mbizo off. I'm not being funny. I mean, again, Nate Harry was a good defensive right back, but the hell is a defensive right back going to offer you when you need a goal?
Realistically, that could have ended 4-5-0. Honestly, being there, I obviously Joe stops one, so that could have been 3. Honestly, I what that striker saw, I don't know what it was. Was he trying to nutmeg Joe? I don't know, but shot it right at him. But then there were some other opportunities where I thought, wow, this really could have been. And I hate to play the game of, you know, it could have been X versus Y type of thing, but like, I don't know. I could have seen us lost that game by 4 or 5 goals. How miserable of a start that was. Never mind the lapses of concentration and us, as you described, Dave and Mike, you also alluded to it, having Flock lost in the middle, then letting Pereira from Orlando run wild with 2 other strikers while Mbizo and Kai are pushing up. Right, like it was. I'm surprised we only lost by what the scoreline was of 1. Right, like it's crazy.
And you know what, Dave? I'm going to make one change to your lineup. I would have put Bueno next to Bedoya in that spot.
Yeah, she has. Don't worry, I forgot about Bueno. Yeah, sorry about that.
But no, but then that's fine. But I'm saying, like, even just tinkering with the lineup, I would have been much more comfortable with that, 100%. And your subs would have still been, well, you would have still had Leon, you would have had Donovan, you would have had Matt Real, Nathan Harrell. So your line, your subs weren't going to be great if you did that lineup. Yeah. But it was one of those matches where you were basically going to tell your people, listen, you're going to play as many minutes as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Unless we absolutely need to change it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, but if you knew that, I'm not sure if that there's a squad list that has to be submitted 24 hours before or something like that. Or
we're on the same page.
But I'm not being funny. Like, if you knew Mikel Uriah was ill, why did you not draft in a Union 2 strike on the bench just because in case?
Union 2 is playing the next day.
I'm just
giving you what I would. That's probably why they did it. But go ahead, dude.
I'm not being funny. Fuck the Union 2. You need to win the game. Right? You put Riasco on the bench. At least have someone to come on and offer an option, as opposed to going, okay, we'll play with a team that sort of had dropped off into a bit of a back three at that point and sort of loaded up. You know, become a bit more narrow defensively. Fine. We'll leave our one striker against your two or three defenders and just offer nothing really in that regard. No disrespect to Chris Donovan, but again, it just it's unforgettable. I mean, okay, now Iwao was earned, okay, he came off. I understand that. Why the hell do you not bring on Raffanello and just bring on an attacker or someone? Even then, if you bring up Raffanello, it gives you the option to then play two tens behind Donovan. At least you've got people closer to him, and then makes. But instead, it was just terrible, terrible.
I mean, go ahead.
I said it out loud at the game. Someone laughed. Then I looked at him and I said, "No, I mean it." Like, I actually made eye contact. This is why, and I'll say it out loud: we miss Corey Burke. We miss Corey Burke. As terrible as difficult as he was to sometimes cheer for, though, last season, a contract year, he really worked his ass off, got himself a nice deal with Red Bull, whatever. We miss Corey Burke. We miss somebody who can be a benchmark player. We talked to Thomas Grønmark, right? He was incredible at headers from set pieces, may it be a throw-in or you know, kicking it in. Thomas told us specifically of how good Corey Burke is at flicking that ball on in set piece plays like that. We miss Corey Burke. People were laughing at me. I'm being serious. We really missed that. Another attacking option that actually knows how to attack, but B, someone who has the height, the guts, and the experience to do it. So I would say experience to do it at the highest level in the MLS by going all the way to the MLS Cup. So I don't know. Neither here nor there. Just something to remember. Him walk, or we let him. We did not match whatever Red Bulls was offering him.
And the reality is, we don't know what Quinn Sullivan is yet. I mean, we really don't. It's so I'm trying to think of the games he's played so far. I mean, I know he played against Alianza. He had an assist for Andres, but I know also Jim has mentioned him possibly being a 10 or a striker. Now, we had actually talked earlier this year about Torres and Quinn, and I said if you bring in Quinn and Torres together with Torres in the 10, I like the creative ability from Torres. Or if you just leave Gazdag in there and put Quinn up top instead of Ua and have Quinn and Carranza going together, which is what Jim did with Burke all the time. We haven't seen enough from him. I mean, what has he played, maybe half an hour so far, 45 minutes total this season? I just don't feel like we know what we're going to get from him in that striker role yet, at least.
Here's my opinion. We sit here going, yeah, Torres can play as another striker. The Union needs to sign two strikers and get rid of Chris Donovan. I mean, no disrespect to Chris Donovan, but you need, as Jose said, we miss a player like Corey Burke who can give you that plan B, and if you need the goal, you can go more direct. You can play off with Ua or Carranza off of him. And again, you need another third striker because I'm not being funny. If you want to compete to win the MLS, you need a third striker that you can rely upon. The Union lose Carranza for one game and everything just goes to absolute shit. Your striking options go to absolute shit when your designated striker or designated player can't last more than 70 minutes. Everything goes to shit.
And not to mention, Ua hasn't exactly played great.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Ua struggled and he can't play more than 70 minutes going off this season and last, unless Jim has this obsession in his mind where one of his strikers can never not play 70 minutes. I mean, I think, Sergio obviously had injury issues, but I mean, I'm not being funny.
Listen, man, I hear you. Even when it was Casper and Sergio, you'd always have Burke come on the 70. There was always a change around that time with the strikers. Yeah. It's been a steadfast substitution for us for a while now. It feels
is there a betting line for a time for first sub?
There should be.
60 minutes.
Yeah, 60 minutes. I mean, so, well, anyway. Well, the problem we have now is we are facing Kansas City on Saturday. They are 13th place right now in the West. And listen, I mean, I know we're kind of complaining a lot, but we're only 6 points back from first in the MLS, in the Eastern Conference, right? We're in the quarterfinals for the CCL, so we're right exactly where we want to be. In the grand scheme of things, it's too early to press the panic button. We hope that Andre Blake can be back by at least maybe the Cincinnati match, if not the match afterwards. Depends on how long they want to take, you know, take for him to come back. So it's not like everything's bleak moving forward. We still have had some positive moments from our subs. We still have had some positive moments in the season. It's just not what we expected. But the problem is I have is that with Kansas City playing on Saturday and then we come back on Tuesday, I'm worried that we're going to get another shifty lineup on the Tuesday that we host Atlas, or we're going to get another B team style lineup this Saturday. And it's, if we don't win or if we draw, then it's just going to be poor momentum going into that Tuesday match where we really need to win by like two goals, right? We cannot host Atlas and draw. We have to win by at least two or three goals. That way we go to Mexico and have the pressure put on them. So Jose, I mean, what's your lineup for this Saturday? Because I have a feeling it's going to be the same starting 11, and I'm not looking forward to that at all.
God. Well, Carranza takes over Donovan, so there's that. I would say that Perea starts at the 6 over Flock. Torres out left. And I guess Bedoya plays. Like, I don't know, Bedoya outright, and then obviously the back four that we saw. I don't know. I could see Harriel stepping in for Mbizo just for this game. Kai is untouchable. You piss him off, you know, he can just walk over the summer, walk out the summer. Who knows? I don't know if that matters, but just speaking out loud, I don't know. It's gonna be weird. It's gonna be a weird game. Do we? Mike, you sort of alluded to it. Things could be worse. Things could be a lot worse. We could be Kansas, but we face Kansas. So are we going to go down to their level, or are we going to figure it out and win by 2-3? Who knows? I mean, even the players that we bought this season or this offseason are the type of caliber that can start in most teams, but somehow it's still not clicking. Ruh-roh. Mike, I think you're muted. Go ahead. Why don't we go to you, Dave? What is your predicted lineup?
I mean, for this week, I think it will be the Diamond again. I would be shocked if it's not. I think it'll be the exact same team that started against Montreal. I think it'll be the same team.
Can you guys hear me now? Okay.
Yeah, you go.
Right. Go ahead, Dave.
I think it'll be the exact same team that started in Montreal. There's no doubt about it. Everyone got excited in the preseason. Like, oh my God, we're going to play a back five. We're going to play 4-3-3. I'm not going to believe any of it until I see it. And I'm convinced. And like, I'm sorry, but I mean, again, if your director of football is the one that's telling you what formations you play, clearly Jim can't change his formation or system until Ernest gives him the green light to. Clearly, he's the guy that makes all the transfers, has all the say in all the transfers. Clearly has a say in the way the team plays and the formation the team plays. Ernest is going to have to give Jim the green light to, you know, change things up if he has to. I mean, and that's the one thing, perhaps, I mean, it's an outdated look. That's the one thing I don't like about directors of football and or GMs or whatever in terms of football, soccer, football, whatever, is the fact that they have too much of a say. It doesn't give the manager the overriding say in transfers and players that he keeps. That's just my opinion. Obviously, Ernest has done a great job building the team it's built, but I think at some point you have to take the training wheels off Jim a bit and say, like, look, give him more freedom, give him more say in the transfers of players that he wants. And that if Jim wants to play a 4-2-3-1, let Jim play a 4-2-3-1, let him change the system. And again, as I sort of alluded to earlier, it becomes so predictable. When you see, okay, again, New Year's been great the last 3 years. Don't get me wrong. But it becomes so easy and predictable to plan against a team. They play the exact same way week in and week out, and you know where the weaknesses are going to be and what to exploit. Again, I think the best example of that is the way in which Arsenal played for so long, and teams in the end just knew how to play against Arsenal, knew how to frustrate them. And we saw it during the like final years of Arsene Wenger's reign. I'm sure Jose, when watching the Premier League, saw it as well. Like, you knew the games Arsenal were going to lose. You knew the team. You knew Arsenal always could only go so far because the way they played and their tactics and the formation and the consistency of how they played with it and the unwillingness to sort of adjust would catch them up, and it always did. And I think that's the one worry about this Union team now is, again, with the constant continuity, again, as I alluded to, the 92% of minutes returning last year, the consistency and the of everything, is that going to catch up to them at some point?
I mean, I hope not. I for this lineup this weekend, I see them going more for the starting rotation. I do hope Perez starts on left, at least. That will at least make me happy. But against a weaker, as of right now, a weaker opponent, I would also wouldn't mind getting experimental with things and maybe trying a different formation, which I know is not going to happen. I'm just speaking out loud here. But the pressure is certainly on. So right now, let's see. I'm going to look at the betting lines here real quick, if you can bear with me for 1 second, because I'm sure the Philadelphia Union are heavy favorites entering this match. But as I look up these stat lines, Jose, what do you think your prediction is for this Saturday, despite all the woes and concerns we have for this one?
Two goals for us. A 2-1 win for us. I think Graham Soucy for Kansas scores. I think for us, Carranza makes his return, scores in the first half. I'm being super specific. Yeah, don't mind me. And I think Perea just scores another goal and puts another notch on his belt onto why he should be starting more often.
You know what's... Wait, oh, let's see. Okay. I'm trying to find this game on FanDuel, and I don't have it.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. FanDuel does not have the Philadelphia Union currently in their books. That
too much
is...
soccer in between. International break right now.
See, that was
a ton of international games.
When my mic was muted, I don't know how it did that either. I asked, is the international duty going to affect this Saturday? I don't think so, right?
No.
Okay. So the lineups, there's no line on FanDuel. So I'm going to check Action Network real quick because I use that a lot for betting. Dave, what is your current prediction for this Saturday?
I could easily see the game ending with a draw, but I think Union will come out on top. I'll say 2-1.
Oh, wow. Okay, I just got the lines. So this is on WinBet. So the Union are -164 favorites. Apparently on FanDuel, Sporting Kansas City is +500. So it's a pretty heavy
Jesus.
Favorite. Yeah, it's a pretty heavy favorite. I don't know why. If anything, I might take money on Sporting Kansas City.
I was going to say, I think I might too. Put 50 on them and just ride it.
That's not a bad outcome if you lose. All right, so Dave, you said 2-1. Who's your scoring for you against this Kansas City team?
I reckon Carranza and...
Say it, Dave. Say it.
You guys can both pick Carranza and Andres to score 2 goals.
That was Andres. Gosdag.
You think he comes back with a vengeance?
Yeah, I think
he's okay. Cool. So you're 2-1. So my biggest issue with that is the fact that both of you guys don't think we're going to have a shutout again.
No, of course not. Why would we? What have we shown?
I can't defend.
No, and you know the biggest issue too? I mean, this is talking about how the games have gone out. Against Columbus, you go down 1-0. Against Miami, you go down 1-0. Against Montreal, you go down 1-0. Against Chicago, you almost went down 1-0 in the first 2 minutes of that game. If I remember, the guy just basically, I think it was Mueller, just missed the freaking kick.
Yep.
And then you go down early within the first, 120 seconds of Orlando match. You've almost conceded or have conceded within the first 15 minutes every single game. And this reminds me of 2 years ago, to Dave's point. Remember how they kept conceding goals really early, or they were giving up leads consistently? It's the same thing. I mean, is the CCL curse that really that big of a thing? Is it that much of an impact on the MLS season that these teams can't play well? Because it's if you look at the historical numbers, when you're in the CCL, you've historically had a poor MLS campaign. I just don't see how it's that impactful with this roster, considering how deep it is and how much Jim has changed the lineup, that we can't put together even a decent performance. But the bigger issue for me is the fact that we can't survive the first 20 minutes without like a legitimate chance to go down 1-0, which is a massive issue for us right now. So I don't blame you guys for saying 2-1. It's just kind of alarming that I don't think either of you have predicted a shutout at home yet. Just saying. So for me, I'm going to go more optimistic. I think, guys, they do 2-0. They're going to get the shutout at home. I think Ua scores, and I think Bedoya scores. I've been waiting for Ali to score. I think he came very close this past week. I think Yachi almost missed, he had a goal against Montreal, if I remember correctly. So I think Ali scores. I think Ua scores, and hopefully gets it back. Sometimes you need to just play a crappy opponent, like the DC United game, right? We need to play someone that we could just beat up on to get this ball rolling here. So 2-0, Bedoya and Ua, you guys have 2-1, 2-1 with Carranza both scoring. And Jose, who would you say your other goal scorer was? Andres?
Andres and Julian.
And then Dave, you said Julian and
Gazdag.
Okay. Hey,
Go back to your point about getting things rolling and getting players rolling again. That's why, obviously. Well, obviously scored twice. Mikel obviously scored twice in Montreal, but I mean, before that, he hadn't scored this season. And those Alianza games would have been the perfect opportunity to get Mikel going, and especially the home game. That fuels on the. I think I said in the group chat. I think perhaps that again fuels the thing of perhaps he can't play 90 minutes. He can't play twice in a week and things like that, because again, you take him off with 20 minutes to go or 30 minutes to go, whatever, against Miami 2-0 down. Chasing the lead, and it's sort of like where you're taking your premier players off when you're chasing a 2-0 lead and you haven't started in the midweek game in the CCL. Again, that then also adds to the conspiracy theories of Mikel Ua can't play more than 70 minutes, he can't play full games, he's not fully healthy, and it just, again, all of that just isn't a good look for this team, the squad management.
At this point, you have to get all three of them going, because when's the last time Carranza scored?
Columbus game.
So he hasn't scored against anybody since Columbus. And then Gazdag scored against Columbus. Chicago? No.
Yeah, he didn't score against Columbus. Chicago. He was two PKs. Yeah.
Yeah. So nobody scored in Miami. Chicago was Torres. The Montreal game was Ua for both of them. So you're. Three strikers, two of your strikers or, offensive players haven't scored since the first week of the season. That's a huge problem. And then to Jim's point in the press conference, he's like, I like that Glessens is creating chances, but if your center back is creating chances on a regular basis, that's a problem because he shouldn't be the one generating offense. It should be everybody else in front of him. As you can see, the frustrations that we had last week have continued to this week. I think we're all frustrated at this point. We've all been tinkering with the lineup about 1,000 times over to figure this out. But ultimately it comes down to Curtin and Tanner to piece it together and say, hey, this isn't working. We need to take Leon out, or take Bedoya out, or even change the formation to the 4-2-3-1, as Dave mentioned earlier, and just change something. Because as they say, right, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. That's kind of where we're at right now with this lineup. So, Jose, any last thoughts before I read the sponsors and sign off?
Excited to be at the game this weekend, and we'll certainly be recording right before you and I actually go to Atlas together, or to the Atlas game at Subaru Park. So just stay positive, stay safe, tune in to us and to the game, and man, we'll see. I fear what's going to happen if we lose this game.
I agree. Dave, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think, again, it's going to be, if the Union don't win this game, we'll at least, look poor. If God forbid they lose, it's going to be a very, very nasty few days on Twitter, at least. It's not going to look good, especially going into the Atlas game. And if you can't beat or see off one of the worst teams in the MLS at home, what a chance have you got against a team like Atlas?
You don't have much of all. If anything, you're going to get probably embarrassed at home, which is going to be far worse, especially considering you're not going to go to Mexico and make any sort of significant scoring impact unless it's a miracle.
Which, by the way, before we go, Mike, I forget what I was reading, so grain of salt. I think attendance for the Atlas game looking very good. Looking very good. I'm thinking a lot of Mexican fans are coming. Club America 2.0, perhaps. Not quite as bad, because that game was crazy in the terms of the amount of yellow that was in the stands. But we'll see. It's great for a Tuesday, right? Yeah, a Tuesday night game. That's going to be exciting.
Subs going up on a Tuesday. Listen, I remember for the Club America game, actually, I was talking to Valerie. And by the way, she can't make it to the show in the comment section, so I'm sure she's going to listen back. So hi, Val. Thanks for watching late. Yeah. So her and I were talking about Memo Ochoa. And I sent her the video of how Ochoa saved Miro's PK, and the place just erupted. But if you remember, if you guys remember, I was 30, 40 minutes late to that game. Remember, I was stuck in traffic on the bridge. It took me like an hour and a half to park. And I mean, I've been outside the Sioux before, but it was so loud. The Club America fans were so loud that night. And it was one of the loudest I've heard that stadium ever. And that includes the Eastern Conference Finals games. It was just, they brought such an energy. And I rewatched the PK that Miro missed, and like the roar from the crowd made it sound like it was a home game. That's how many of them that were there. Even on the streets outside the stadium, they were still selling stuff when I got there at the 40-minute mark.
It's gonna be crazy. I'm excited to see what shows up on that Tuesday, but let's get through this weekend first, hopefully with a win.
I mean, listen, Atlanta lost 6-1. You know, the Miami's lost recently. It's not like these teams that we've played against have all been, you know, playing so much better. That's the MLS. There's going to be games where you're terrible. There's going to be teams where you're great, and that's just kind of how the league goes. But before we go, let me read the sponsors real quick, and then we can sign off as we hit the 40-minute mark. Check out Statement Games for Check out Statement Games at statementgames.com for a fun new way to fantasy sports entertainment. Win gift cards and prizes. Free to sign up at statementgames.com. You have Doan Distillery at the Tri Barn, Public Market, and Quakertown. Go to doandistillery.com to check out their wide variety of drinks and spirits. You have Vinny's Pizza and Restaurant in Allentown, PA. Discover a new favorite by trying their top pizzas and so much more. Check out the new website at vinny'spizzarestaurant.com. Suck to the Grills at 6750 Iroquois Trail number 5 in Allentown, PA, and at sucktothegrills.com for homemade hot and cold sandwiches, salads, appetizers, baked goods, available for any event. Like if you want to host an Atlas watch party, call Suck to the Grills. And then lastly, get the Across the Pitch gear and all the AAT Sports Network gear at the aatsportsnetwork.com/shop. And that is our sponsor read for this evening. Not the show we want to have, guys. We want to have a more upbeat episode, but that is what it is. Saturday night, Union hosts Sporting Kansas City. Until then, go Union.
Dupe.
Good night.